Good afternoon and welcome. Today's program is sponsored by the Rotary Club of San Jose, the Silicon Valley Leadership Group, the Mineta Transportation Institute, and the Commonwealth Club Silicon Valley, and brought to you from the Rotary Summit Center in downtown San Jose. My name is Larry Stone, president of the Rotary Club of San Jose. It is my pleasure to introduce today's guest, Roelof van Ark. As CEO of the California High-Speed Rail Authority, Roelof is responsible for overseeing the implementation of our country's first high-speed rail system, an 800-mile transit plan that will undoubtedly be the biggest public works project ever in this country. Mr. van Ark comes to the job with over 30 years of experience of transportation, most recently as president of the Alstom Transportation Incorporated, the North American subsidiary of France's Alstom S.A., makers of the fastest trains in the world and builders of Europe's TGV high-speed rail trains. Roelof has also served as president of the Aviation Security for Envision Technologies Incorporated and spent more than 20 years working in Germany, South Africa, Sacramento for Siemens, the manufacturer of the popular ICE high-speed trains. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in welcoming Roelof van Ark.
Thank you very much, Mr. President Larry Stone. Thank you to the sponsors of today, but in particular the Rotary Club of San Jose. Thank you to everybody who is attending the session today. And a special thank you also to my board member and colleague, Rod Derridan, who I know worked very hard and diligently to make this day happen today. And I'm really honored to be here to speak before the Commonwealth Club. And it's very good to be in San Jose again today. I must add, I think this is about my third or fourth visit in the last 3 weeks. So San Jose is becoming one of my target cities on the alignment between San Francisco and Los Angeles. Some of you may know that I have been living, or we have been living, in the United States for more than 12 years, and we have spent 7 years of those here in California. In fact, two and a bit years, just down the road in Redwood City, and some years in Sacramento. Those were all good years. We enjoyed the time here. The last 5 years in New York, also very challenging. But the peninsula has always been great for us and a great challenge for us. But as you can hear from my accent, which I don't think in my life I'm going to get rid of, my roots are from elsewhere. And in fact, I can confirm I was born and raised in South Africa. So I hope that I can, or you will allow me, to start my discussion today by borrowing a few words of one of my countrymen, a great statesman, a Nobel Peace winner, Nelson Mandela, who once said, "It always seems impossible until it's done." Obviously, one does not want to underestimate the near impossible task that Nelson Mandela undertook. But I would like to apply that same quote, "It always seems impossible until it's done," to my own challenge, the California High-Speed Rail train project. As you heard, this is a multi-billion dollar project, the first phase being over $40 billion for phase one, which is the connection between San Francisco and Los Angeles Anaheim. And we touch, by going through this project, more than 90% of the people of California. Somehow, they feel touched, we touch them, and we have to communicate with them. This project will be based on state-of-the-art transportation technology never used before in the United States of America. And as a technology person, I can tell you that the state-of-the-art is such that it is really what is being tested and tried in the world today. So we have pushed the envelope so far that a 220 miles per hour system is modern technology, state of the art in the world. It is the technology we need here in California. But I must confess that I wonder whether President Nelson Mandela would ever have used those words that he quoted if he knew that he had to comply with the Californian Environmental Quality Act, CEQA. Joking aside, the reason I'm here today is because I recently took on this job, the job of Chief Executive Officer of the California High Speed Rail Authority. Depending on how you count the days, it's been about 4 months now, just under 4 months, which you can count as approximately 100 business days or 120 working days since I began this new task on June the 1st. When I started the job, I told my board of directors, and Rod Derridan was there, that I would take my first tasks in the first 60 days to meet the various teams and to check on the project to ensure that there are no major flaws in the project, to listen to stakeholders, but stakeholders both large and small, and to ask questions and to make sure that we are comfortable with the project that we have to build. So this is what I did. I met with each of the regional engineering teams several times to get a firm grasp of where we were on the technology and the environmental review process for each of the segments. I met with stakeholders on the project, from legislators to mayors to city council members and city staff, to those in the agricultural area, the freight railroads, the business communities, the man and woman in the street, the disability groups, and the minority groups. In my first month alone, I met more than 300 such stakeholders, and the task continues. I've reached out to the international partners, because they are important for us, in countries like Japan, China, Spain, France. And we as an authority have agreements in place, cooperation agreements in place with 8 different countries around the world, all countries with a lot of knowledge of high-speed rail. And we need to use those agreements that we have to be able to learn from those countries and those operators those things that we need to bring to the United States. We need to make sure that we do not make mistakes as we implement our first project in the United States. I've visited every region along our alignment, and that means up and down the corridor between Anaheim, Los Angeles, Central Valley, and back here onto the peninsula, where I've been very often. I have been to Washington, D.C., and I will speak about that again, because that is a very important part of the dream of this particular project and the reality to make this project come true. I did all this to see for myself, to test and evaluate those decisions made by others before me, to determine the immediate needs of the project, and to ensure that the assumptions made were solid and correct. And after doing so, I can tell you that today I am more confident than ever that this project can and will be built. Now, I was reasonably confident when I started in May, because I surely would not have taken on this job if there was no chance of success. But I do want to reconfirm that today I feel more confident than I did ever before that we can and will build this project. And one of the most important things that is behind a project of this nature is the people and the people. And I really can reconfirm that wherever I go, I have a tremendous amount and receive a tremendous amount of support from the people of California who want to see a high-speed rail system built. I believe we will build the system, and we have the support from Washington to begin the work in the near future. And I'll talk some more about the near future. This will give us the opportunity to create tens of thousands of jobs in our state, something that we so dearly need at the moment in this time of record unemployment. I believe we will deliver for our state a cheaper and more convenient backbone infrastructure and transportation system. Californian economy needs to become more efficient, and the quality of life of its residents will improve, and it will enhance the complete economy and the future of the state. We are doing this for ourselves, for our children, and our grandchildren. What I've seen in my short time of the project gives me that confidence. Confidence not because of the progress of the project itself, but confidence because systems around the world continue to grow, high-speed rail systems, and there is no need to fear that our system would be the only one in the world that will not be successful. The support that comes from Washington is important. The support that President Obama's administration and the Congress has given to date has been very important, but the support has also been coming from Sacramento and also from the other communities, business, and others. I see support from the labor groups who see the great potential of job creation for high-speed rail. I see the support from our colleagues in the regional transportation systems. We are interfacing with all the regional transportation groups, and they understand the need to have an integrated transportation system. I have never and will never say that high-speed rail should be on its own. It is an integrated transportation system. We require airports, we require buses, we require freeways, mass transit systems, light rail systems. We just need the right integration of all these systems to make California a better place to live and work in. And I see the support of those around the globe who have been successful in building high-speed rail and who believe themselves, and I know some are here today, who believe themselves that they will support us in finally operating and making the system happen in California. We have to build a system because the people of California voted to have it built through Proposition 1A. They voted for a high-speed rail system in California. But we have gone back and we have some polls of the people of California that have been done more recently. And once again, with a majority of 76%, the people of California have said that they would like to see high-speed rail built in their state. So I am confident, as you can hear, I am motivated and I'm willing to get this done. I am not a politician. I'm an engineer, as you heard. I'm a businessman. I am not a politician. So I obviously have spent quite a bit of my time working on the challenges that lie ahead. And there are challenges. And some of them are significant. And so I have decided to share some with you because some of these challenges need to be shared and worked on together. We need your support and everybody's support to make such big projects come true in the United States of America and in California. Here is the most important single issue we must address, and that is the issue of funding. On the topic of funding for this project, the voters of California through Proposition 1A in November 2008 approved $9.95 billion in general obligation bonds, $9 billion of which would be used by ourselves to build the project, while the balance of $950 million was for the integration of other modes of transportation with the high-speed rail system. Unfortunately, the $9.95 billion was not indexed to escalation, so that means the longer we wait, the less value the $9.95 billion will have for us. So it is important that we begin quite early. That money obviously has to be used as a leverage to ensure other funding for California. Obviously, based on a budget of $43 billion for Phase 1, this close to $10 billion is not sufficient. So many ask, where does the balance come from? Well, the business plan, which you can all see and is available on the internet, shows that the balance of the funding comes mainly from two areas. About $18 billion of the funding needs to come from the federal government, and around about $10 to $12 billion should come from the private sector. Once again, President Obama and the Congress included $8 billion in the Recovery Act for high-speed and intercity rail. Most of you are aware of the fact that California fared very well in that first round, and we were able to achieve a value of $2.25 billion that was allocated to our project. It was a good start. Since that time, the amounts that have been allotted on an annual basis have been much smaller, although we recently applied for another $1 billion from the federal government out of the financial year 2010 funding. We hope to receive the outcome of this next week. But although these grants are very much appreciated and they are very much the seed money we need to begin this project, these amounts are relatively small compared to the $43 billion or the $18 billion federal funding we require. And we need to ensure that there is going to be a continuous stream of funding coming from Washington. A long-term infrastructure project like ours in California cannot be successful when one has to vie for a portion of a modest annual appropriation. Even if we see $1 or $2 billion per year nationally available for high-speed rail through the transportation bill, such monies are not sufficient. So great commitment from the federal government is what is needed. Without such firm commitment that the federal government wants to build high-speed rail not just in California, but in the United States of America, these projects will not be a reality. Many of you may have seen that yesterday an announcement was made for a high-speed rail in the Northeast Corridor as well, announced by Amtrak. So the whole idea of high-speed rail is really starting to blossom and become a reality in the United States. Let's get to private funding. Many people have questions about private funding, too. I do not fear too much the private funding issue. Although it will be a challenge, private funding for California's high-speed rail train project will come. But we first have to see to it that the federal commitment is in place. I recently returned from a trip with the governor from Asia, where we visited China, Japan, and South Korea. In all of those countries, I led the high-speed train delegation to meet with suppliers and financiers and government officials. And in all three countries, I can confirm the interest to support California to build, to operate, and to fund this project was very positive. The commitment is there, but they were also outspoken and said that what was missing is still that commitment from the central government. These projects worldwide require a government commitment. We have the state commitment, and now we need the federal government commitment in addition to that. So I feel confident that we are moving in the right direction. Talking about the private sector, as you know and heard, I've been in the private sector for most of my life. And just a few months ago, I was sitting on the other side watching projects like California. I was working for high-speed rail suppliers such as the TGV in France, and before that, the ICE trains in Germany, as you heard. And these big organizations, and myself in my previous position as president of the company for North America, are watching high-speed rail in California and are watching for the appropriate time to come to the discussions, which incorporates also the funding mechanisms. Worldwide, high-speed rail is attracting private funding. There's no question in my mind that we in California can attract that same type of private funding. California and the United States of America are very attractive business partners. I see no reason why these suppliers will not be here when we need them, and that that money will not be forthcoming when we need it. We must also not underestimate our own local civil construction companies who are very interested, rank among the best in the world, and have good experience of PPP projects around the world. They too are interested to participate in our project and include funding. But again, I say that until the federal government brings that long-term commitment, we will not get the private sector to come with firm commitments to our project. So what needs to be done? On the authorities side, we are working to convince members of Congress and the administration in Washington to put in place a mechanism for long-term funding for infrastructure projects, just as has been done and accomplished in the past, say, decade or so, for mass transit systems. For those of you involved with the FTA, if you see the growth of funding for mass transit systems in full funding grant agreements, that value has grown strongly in the last 10 to 15 years. Or, of course, the more important example that we should be looking at is what was accomplished in the 50s for the very successful interstate freeway system, supported by the Federal Aid Highway Act of 1956. The Federal Aid Highway Act of 1956, popularly known as the National Interstate and Defense Highway Act, was enacted in June 29, 1956, by President Eisenhower, and it originally started with $25 billion for the construction of 41,000 miles of interstate highway and was to cover a period of 20 years. We need to look at something similar for high-speed rail in the United States and are talking in Washington to see what mechanism we can put in place. But this is where I require everybody's support. This is not just Californians' problem or issue. This is a national issue. All influential people, politicians, mayors, elected officials, business leaders, labor leaders, assembly members, chambers of commerce, we ask you to help to speak to those in Washington, D.C., and urge your members of Congress to speak in Washington, D.C., to ensure that we keep that momentum going to build up this mechanism for long-term funding of high-speed rail. Only with something in the magnitude of, say, $5 or $8 billion a year in the coming years will California be able to be allotted a fair share. When we talk about $18 billion from the federal government, we don't talk about one shot, we don't talk about 1 year. It is needed over a period of about 10 years. And therefore, it's about $1.8 billion a year, which is not insurmountable. But we need to put the mechanism in place. And this is where people like yourselves, everybody can help to make that a reality. Another challenge to our project is the timeline. The reason I say this is because we actually have a timeline, although sometimes people do not believe that. And it is a very tight timeline. Less than 2 years ago, this project did not have a timeline. It had theoretical timelines. But the ARRA dollars, the dollars that are coming from Washington as part of the stimulus packages, set the timelines and the deadlines. So in September 2012, we need to begin and have construction underway. And that is quite soon. And in September 2017, we must have used the money that was allocated to us as ARRA funding, which means that the project is close to start. So we have a very tight timeline. And as you may know, we have divided our system into 10 sections in order to manage the state and federal environmental process. And only four of those segments, which were felt at the time, were eligible to apply for the ARRA funding. The project will need to start by having one of those four, or one and a bit of those four segments, built as first portion of the project. In an ideal world, and today if we had to look at it again, possibly the four segments are not all logically the correct ones, and I'll give you one good example thereof. High-speed rail means a system that travels long distances between metropolitan areas that connects high population areas and must operate at very high speeds. We are not a commuter rail service. We are a high-speed rail service. We do not compete with commuter rail services. They are our partners. They supply us, and we supply them. However, these four segments that we've got, as you know, are generally very far apart, so we cannot stitch them together to make one high-speed rail system out of them. 30 miles in Southern California to Los Angeles, a stretch of track or alignment between San Jose and San Francisco, and two segments in the Central Valley. Again, there are pieces missing between them that would logically finally make up a high-speed rail system. And we would need to start building one of these segments in 2012. So only when we have tied together or stitched together, say, three or four of those segments, will we finally end up having a high-speed rail system, and would we require the trains to start operating on such high-speed rail system. That is part of our timeline. This means that our goal must be to ensure that in some way or other we connect the metropolitan areas of San Francisco, San Jose, with the Central Valley, and the metropolitan area, the greater Los Angeles, with the Central Valley. Those two segments are instrumental and critical for the future long-term high-speed rail system that we will be building. But we are where we are, and we have the ARRA funds pending, and we definitely do not want to see the ARRA funds return to Washington. We urgently need this money to support California, firstly, to initiate this wonderful project, and secondly, to kickstart the economy. And infrastructure projects do exactly that. They do a great deal of good for the economy. So back to the selection process. A decision will have to come before our board within the next 2 months or so, in which the board will finally have to decide which of the four segments would be built first. We do not have sufficient funding to build them all, as we said. We may be able to build from a half to maybe one and a half, depending on which segments are chosen. It will be a difficult, politically charged decision, but needs to be taken so that we can continue and start construction in 2012. Again, I, as an engineer, want to ensure you that I will put all effort into making sure that we make a correct decision to make sure that we build high-speed rail in California that will finally be a project and a system we'll all be proud of. The third largest challenge that we have before us is the one that affects us quite greatly here in the peninsula. And that is the issue of communications and outreach. The issue of helping the communities to realize the benefits of high-speed rail. This is a challenge that obviously is tied to the timeline, and the timeline can be negatively affected by negative aspects of this communication. I acknowledge that the Californian High-Speed Rail Authority has not always done what it should maybe have done, but under time pressure and limited resources, it has tried to do as much as possible to keep all the communities informed and involved. And it depends on who you speak to. Many tell you how great that association and working relationship is, and unfortunately others say they do not receive enough. Currently, the authority has obviously been concentrating on the business of the state and federal environmental reviews because this needs to be concluded by the fall of 2011. We have therefore possibly not engaged sufficiently with all the other people and also with the commercial opportunities that arise when one builds a high-speed rail line. We continue to aim to work with all the communities and all the stakeholders. It is important that they understand the benefits that such systems bring. We have to work on mitigation programs to ensure that local communities feel that we are doing the best that we can to mitigate what may be uncomfortable for them. Our challenge is to help every community along this high-speed rail corridor of 800 miles. The statewide opportunity and benefits are clear. A more efficient travel and transportation system between north and south is a very clear advantage, which will ensure that the airports and freeways, which are overloaded, will be able to cope and we will be able to share the load. At times, the benefits for local authorities are not seen and are not understood. Our challenge is to make cities like San Jose, Merced, Palmdale, and all of them see these opportunities. And I'd like to take an example of the city of Kakagawa in Japan, a town about 120 miles southwest of Tokyo, of just 63,000 people at the time. Just like many American agriculture-based towns, it was drying up. The young people were leaving. They were going to the big cities, and the population was aging. The people of Kakagawa saw Japan's bullet train, the Shinkansen, as an opportunity. They raised $120 million and built a large town square in front of the high-speed rail station with the needed infrastructure. Following the opening of the Shinkansen train station there, businesses and people began moving to Kakagawa again. Multi-story buildings were constructed around the station, an industrial park was developed and filled, and new accommodation had to be built. Both the city population and the tax revenues increased rapidly. We need to help our cities understand and work on such concepts. These are great opportunities. Cities, in particular along the peninsula, whose wonderful and quaint downtowns could be affected, should look at how today they are being dissected by a diesel commuter rail system, serving them well. But if we could put our system in and not get into the discussion of elevated or in a trench, which could be partially covered, there are huge real estate opportunities that become available. If only we could discuss such opportunities together to reconnect those cities, east and west, under or over the high-speed and commuter rail lines, we believe that they would be able to ensure additional walkways, accommodation, parks, and retail space, which would benefit them and could benefit the high-speed rail and commuter rail lines in their cities. These kinds of ideas require communication, which is in our hands, partnering, which we all have to do together, and of course they take vision. So we request once again that we continue that dialogue and discussion with each other. I think it is the future generations of California who will look back at us years from now, and either they will admire our vision or else they will look back and shake their heads wondering why we didn't do what should have been done. We dare not let that happen. Letting opportunities pass by would not be the Californian thing to do. Because that is what I actually most admire, and that's why I love living in this new home of mine, being California. And that is that through history, California and Californians have taken on the challenges others have declared as being impossible, as being too big or too expensive. You don't have to look far from here, just a bit north from here. There was a project where the naysayers once called it the bridge that couldn't be built. After 4 years and 80,000 miles of steel cable and enough concrete to pave the sidewalk walks from New York to San Francisco, the Golden Gate Bridge spans San Francisco Bay. Another example is when California opened its first modern freeway 70 years ago. All 8 miles of it has grown into a highway and freeway system that now stretches more than 50,000 miles. A little further back in history, just 20 years after the Gold Rush, the University of California started with 10 professors and 38 students. Today, it's one of the world's leading centers of academic achievement and research, serving 250,000 students. Now, once again, California is poised to take the lead in the nation by building the first high-speed rail line in the United States. I believe we build projects like this not just for the short-term benefits, which they will bring, but for the future generations. Generations who won't be able to imagine a California without them, just as one cannot imagine California today without the Bay Bridge, without the freeways, or without UC Berkeley or Davis or Stanford. I personally am committed to build this project for my children and my grandchildren. I hope you will support me to make that a reality. We'll build this project in California because, if I can refer back to the statement from Nelson Mandela, it's truly worth doing it. It always seems impossible until it's done. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rilof, for sharing that vision. My name is Terry Christensen. I'm a professor of political science at San Jose State University. And I'm going to be asking the questions that our audience have submitted. There's still time to do that, so if you've got one, I see a couple hands up here. Our volunteers will come around and collect them. Rilof, thanks for the big vision. As you might have guessed, we can't avoid localizing that vision because we have a lot of questions with local concerns here, and I'm going to start with one of the toughest ones. And that is, given that the Hatch-Mott-McDonnell draft peer review of the SAAR says that your estimated cost for the open trench option is way underestimated and that the cost for the covered trench are way overestimated, can you continue to claim that you can't afford the covered trench option for the residential neighborhoods of the peninsula?
I am aware of a press statement about this comparison, although purely from an engineering point of view, a trench option clearly is more expensive than an elevated option. I am willing to have those discussions And we are also willing to try and find a resolution and some way forward on this. I have spoken to the cities along the peninsula and have tried to explain that in the trench option, it may be possible to cover parts of that trench, and not the whole trench for safety reasons and other reasons. You cannot cover the whole trench, but you can cover portions of the trench, and you would then establish real estate on top of the trench. That would give us an income stream from such real estate, which may be able to mitigate some of the additional cost. But a trench, to manufacture and build a trench while operating an existing commuter rail line, is a much more expensive option than to build an elevated structure which can be built without actually affecting the existing commuter rail system. And therefore, that comparison has been done by our engineering team, and we are trying to, with the communities involved, find out whether there are real estate development options that could offset some of that difference or that difference.
Thank you. Excuse me. Thank you. This is another question from somebody on the peninsula, I think, or maybe not. Listen to it and see what you think. It appears few, if any, peninsula cities want the high-speed rail in their communities. If they continue to try to stop the process, will the HSR authority bypass all of them and have no stops between San Jose and San Francisco?
Was the question no stops?
No stops.
I'm not sure that the question about San Jose and San Francisco is about stops, because high-speed rail will not have many stops. Once again, we are not a commuter rail system. So the stops will be the stops that today are being operated by Caltrain. We definitely will have one stop. It makes sense to have a stop in the close proximity of San Francisco SFO Airport. And we are looking at a possibility of a second stop. We are collecting passengers at stops, and Caltrain will be the supplier to those few stations where we will stop of passengers. So whether we have one or two stops between San Jose and San Francisco is still being debated at the moment, but it's not really clear why the person is questioned what they actually mean by whether there will be no stops, because the track would still have to go through the same alignment.
Right. We understand that Los Angeles, Anaheim, and San Francisco all have tunnels under study. Why is your authority determined to reject an underground option for San Jose?
We, in the city of San Francisco, there will only be a very short access to the Transbay Terminal, which will be underground. Everything else is actually at grade or elevated, or the option is also still trench, part of the peninsula. So the only issue is that when you get into a densely populated high-rise building city like you have in San Francisco, where the Transbay Terminal is being built, the only way you can get into the Transbay Terminal is through a tunnel. So that is the answer for San Francisco. In Los Angeles, I mean, obviously we tunnel through mountains as we go down the alignment. But in San Francisco, we do not have an option that's tunnel. We have a section. The San Francisco LA Union Station will either be at grade or elevated. So those are the two options that exist. We do go in one segment underground because we would have to destroy a huge amount of houses. And in that particular segment, due to the impact, the environmental impact, we would go for a small segment. It's a very short portion, possibly underground. It's one of various options. There's an alternative, which is completely elevated, that comes out of Union Station and goes along the riverside. It is elevated and then goes at grade. So all these decisions are purely made on the environmental impact. That means very often on having to displace houses or buildings and all options are looked at. The San Jose situation is slightly different in that in San Jose there is a very good access to the San Jose Derridan station, which makes logical sense, and it has been analyzed as such, to come in on an aerial structure. I'd like to say at the same time, for of course many people have not seen international high-speed rail systems, but a elevated structure, high-speed rail structure, is very common, very, very common in the rest of the world. And many cities are approached by elevated high-speed rail platforms. And we must also not forget that in this area here at Derridan Station, the speed is very low of the trains coming into there as well. But it's not favoring one city above another at all. These decisions are made purely on environmental impact, which means if sometimes you cannot get through a region, you have to go underneath it. But it's you have to minimize that really to the greatest extent. Again, San Jose's access is very open, very accessible, and therefore does not necessitate any underground stations. Or an underground station, I'd also like to add, has got a lot of complexities. One should always consider everything that goes together with these solutions. Trench solutions that are talked about on the peninsula are also very complicated because on the peninsula, and we're becoming very local now, on the peninsula, we operate three different systems. We operate a commuter rail system by Caltrain. We operate a high-speed rail in future, and we operate freight. Many people are dependent on that freight coming down at night when you and I are sleeping, but the freight trains have to use that same corridor. And sometimes going into trenches is not the easiest thing for operators to live with, or in fact for us to construct so that they can get out of the trenches to access their sidings where they service their various customers. So, you know, I would only ask everybody when they consider these various options, they must think of all the aspects related to the options before coming to a conclusion. And when we do the environmental impact, all these options are really studied in depth. And we would like to interface with everybody to discuss these issues too.
The above ground option seems to be the in the lead for the high-speed rail coming through San Jose. And I understand that right now the authority and the city of San Jose are negotiating a memorandum of understanding that would give the city of San Jose a significant say in the design of elevated high-speed rail through the city. What are the prospects of reaching an agreement, and what are the prospects of us seeing a truly iconic high-speed rail structure as it comes through San Jose?
Sadly, many people have believed in the past that high-speed rail is the big giant that just wants to come through and destroy everything they see. And that is very far from the truth. We are part of the community. We are part of, we're represented by locals here that represent you all. We have board members from all the regions that we're going to build the alignment through. So the communities are, in fact, represented in and around our authority. And we are working together with San Jose to try and find an acceptable solution. They were afraid that we would just come in and build something which was very industrial and not very aesthetically pleasing. And I believe that we will be able to come to a good agreement with them to make that happen.
And we'll see an iconic structure.
And we will see, the iconic structure revolves around a bridge as opposed to, you know, everything being iconic. It must be a pleasing, aesthetic design. As I say, the bridge is the what is referred to as the iconic structure.
Mm-hmm. You've seen a lot of community engagement along the peninsula and in San Jose and in San Francisco, I'm sure. I just wonder how this compares with what's going on in the Central Valley and Merced and Fresno or in Southern California and L.A. Is there as much engagement? Is there as much concern? Is there more support? Is there less support?
The amount of outreach and activity that the authority and all its consultants and engineers and outreach consultants do on the peninsula is greater than it is anywhere else along the 800-mile alignment. So we are spending more funds and more people on the peninsula than we are anywhere else. But unfortunately, I must say, the support, let me turn it around, the support on the peninsula I think is good too, but the negative comments that we do receive from the peninsula, we are not receiving from anywhere else. The support from the Central Valley is outstanding. It's very positive. Does not mean that that there aren't people that are concerned. There we have the issue with the agricultural community, but we are talking to them on a continuous basis. So they talk to us. The towns and cities as well. But in the south, we have a good amount of interaction with all the communities there, but we are not having, unfortunately for the peninsula, we are not having the same problems in the other areas as we have in a small portion of the peninsula. I must say the support in San Jose has been great, the support in San Francisco has been great, and I must add some of the other communities along that line, the support has been great as well. But the support of the people, because I know a lot and I have friends and family on the peninsula as well, there's a lot of support in the peninsula. Unfortunately, there are some aspects and some smaller groups that are not really the supporters of high-speed rail.
Speaking still of the peninsula, how serious a threat to the timeline for HSR do you think the litigation will be?
Well, I need to repeat what I said in my little speech, in my talk, and that is we have to make a decision as to where we start. And there are four options. So as a manager and as an executive, I always need to consider if I need to start and I need to spend my funds by 2017, and there is a high level of possibility of litigation, what does that mean to my timeline? So disruption could be negative for a final decision that will be made by the board, but it surely is one factor amongst many that we have to consider when we decide where we need to start this project. I do not believe that at the end of the day the complete high-speed rail system will not be built because of that, because the vast majority, as I said, other than those few towns on the peninsula, the rest of the state is fully behind the project. The communities are fully behind the project. They want it built. So we will start, but it may well delay the segment between San Jose and San Francisco.
Well, changing to a little bit different topic area, these questions are more about the political context for the building of the rail system. And the first one is, our California legislature can't even figure out a budget for the current year. What faith can there be that a long-term plan can be met financially? I'm a small business owner, and I don't trust the system.
Well, as I mentioned before, I'm not a politician, so maybe I can call the politician to answer it. But, yes, of course the budget is a problem. It is also a problem for us. Let's put that on the table immediately. We have many people working for us at the moment, and they're all not being paid. And we are just so thankful to those many companies that are working for us without pay, and that they are willing to continue, because they believe in the project, to make it happen, that they are willing to continue without the money. So the fact that we are not able to get a budget in Sacramento is worrying. But at the same time, we should be relatively comfortable with the thought that the people of California decided they want the system. So there's a commitment that's been made to the people of California by having the Prop 1A passed that we actually have to build a system. So Sacramento, too, has to honor that commitment. And therefore, I believe that at the end of the day, it's not the budget or not passing the budget that's going to be important. It is important to us because it is having some effects on us. But the Prop 1A bond, which is in place, the bill is in place, that is important to us, and we have to honor what the voters of California want, and that is to build a system. And also the legislators in Sacramento know that they have to honor that because the people wanted it and the people voted for it. So the alternative would have to be that we'd have to ask the people whether they don't want it, and I don't think anybody's going to go there too soon because I think we do have the real support to get this project done.
Well, we also have concern about who might be governor and who might be president in the not-too-distant futures. The candidates for governor are on opposing sides in the debate for high-speed rail, and the Obama administration won't be there forever. So what happens when we see a change in administration, state and national, or national?
These questions are surely becoming political now, but yes. Let me give you my response to this.
We're a very
political group. I believe that there's obviously differences between Republicans and Democrats, and I try and stay as apolitical in all these issues as I can because it's my job to build this particular project. But I believe that both parties know one thing, and that is we need to create jobs. So these projects have not just ours, also Florida, and some of the Midwest projects that are intermediate high speed, they're not real high speed, they're intermediate high speed, have achieved a certain amount of momentum. And it is going to be a lot more difficult, whether it be a new governor or a new or a change in the House in Washington, and for them to totally oppose high speed rail. Because by that, they would be totally opposing the growth of economy and jobs that are so necessary for us all. I hope, as has so often been said, that high-speed rail in the United States has now achieved that momentum, not just in one project, as it was many years ago. There was a Fox project in Florida. It was one project, and it was stopped. But today, the high-speed rail is a national momentum, and it would become so much more difficult for politicians to stop that national momentum, because I believe we'll get a lot of high-speed enthusiasts and builders will get a lot of support from the labor unions, from business, to get the politicians to understand that this is so necessary for our economy. So I stay optimistic that there will be an understanding of the value of high-speed rail for the country and the value of high-speed rail in the short term for the economy.
Okay, and with that, we'll let you off the political hook. But I have two related questions here. And the first one is, yesterday I traveled from downtown L.A. to the Bay Area in 2.5 hours, door to door. How is high-speed rail going to be better than that? And the related question is, what happens to the investment we've made in San Jose in our airport when high-speed rail comes through?
I think that everybody must understand, as I said earlier on, this is not a project just for today. You all know, too, that the population of California is planned to grow. So we are talking here about the future and about the growth of our state and about the needs of the state for the future. So it's an integrated system that we're talking about. The airports are required, but many of the airports will tell you, and many of the aircraft operators, the airlines, will tell you as well, that the short hauls is not really what they want. Every slot that you require at an airport is required, whether it is a big plane or a small plane, whether it's a long-haul flight or a short flight. And for those of you, like I used to travel every day of my life, once or twice a day, know that the short flights are the ones that immediately get affected when you start having weather problems, when you start having fog problems at SFO, when you start having any issues. It is the short flights that get delayed. Now, again, we're talking about the future. We're not just talking about today. We're talking about a growth of the economy. We're not just talking about today. So we're not saying that that infrastructure is going to be standing idle. That infrastructure is going to be used. But the airports and the airlines generally will take the long hauls. The United States is a huge country. It is well connected with the rest of the world. And the long hauls will be more what they will concentrate on. And we do the short hauls because the 300 to 500 mile kind of segments that we're talking about is short haul for them. And therefore, as you also know, the 2.5 hour door-to-door between L.A. and San Francisco is not an everyday occurrence. It does happen, and I fly tomorrow, and I fly twice, there and back. And I'm afraid whether I'm going to get there on time, and I'm afraid whether I'll be back on time tomorrow as well. And it's not because they do a bad job. It's just that they have a lot of other influences on them that often affect the takeoff and landing times of the airlines. So the main advantage of a high-speed rail system, and that's what we have to strive for because we're good and we're going to be good and we're good as an American nation, and that is we're going to be on time. We're going to run a system that's going to be run like the Japanese or the Spanish or the European systems, and that means we have to leave on time and we have to arrive on time. And that means when you get that other system in place, you know, you're going to be so reliant on that accuracy that you're going to start using the system. We must not underestimate, even on the Northeast Corridor, where many people criticize the Acela system that was put in place because it's not necessarily very high speed, the kind of high speed the rest of the world has done. But even the Acela service has become full. The Acela service has drawn passengers, and today Amtrak will tell you it is one of their, it's their best operation that they've got. And if they could operate a lot faster, they would be happy to operate faster. And they've seen the need for a real, very high-speed rail system because people want those systems. We have not been able in the United States, we have not been able to offer the people that alternative and very often turn that around and say, our people will not use the alternative. If you look at mass transit systems in the United States, the ridership numbers have been growing in the United States as well. Yes, we had a little reduction during the economic downturn, which is normal worldwide, but the growth has been really strong, and we have been able to invest more and more money in mass transit systems as well, and it's the same trend you get all around the world. The American will get out of the car if we offer them an alternative that will finally give them some leisure time, a better efficiency, will offer business better efficiency as well. And if the systems are in place, people will use them.
Thank you very much. Unfortunately, we're out of time. We had lots of great questions. I will pass these on to our speaker so he can at least see what your point was. But I want to say thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I hope everyone here at the Rotary Summit Center enjoyed this afternoon's program, which was brought to you by the Commonwealth Club of Silicon Valley, the Silicon Valley Leadership Group, the Mineta Transportation Institute, and the Rotary Club of San Jose. Again, I would like to thank Roelof van Ark, the CEO of the California High Speed Rail Authority, Dr. Terry Christensen, the political science professor at San Jose State University, our audience here in San Jose, and those of us joining on the radio. And now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club, celebrating over 100 years of enlightened discussion, is adjourned.